Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin. Welcome to the UFO Files, and we're broadcasting from Roswell, the 60th anniversary, and we're here at the Civic Center, and we'll be here until noon again tomorrow, 10 until noon. So if you're around, have a chance to come on by, please do, and visit us. We have a booth as well, and right next to our booth is a Fate Magazine booth, and one of my favorite ghostwriters, and I hope you don't call me, when I call you a ghostwriter, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, I don't mean you're writing for other people. You're writing about ghosts.
You go to
mansions that are haunted and spend the night by yourself. Incredible. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jerry, and it's really nice to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has, and we look forward to seeing you all the time. You're one of our favorite people. Now, you're very busy. You're leaving here. You're going to Kentucky. What's in Kentucky?
I'm doing an investigation of the Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which is a ruined tuberculosis sanatorium and old nursing home just outside on the outskirts of Louisville. It's quite haunted. And I'm going to be there two nights in a row doing all-night investigations.
What do you do exactly when you investigate these haunted houses?
We take in equipment. We try to capture anomalies on video, digital camera. We set up recorders for electronic voice phenomena. We take EMF readings. And sometimes people bring in psychics, too, but I don't think we have a psychic in our group. But in other words, we try and capture hard data of haunting phenomena. And usually, almost anyone who goes to a place like Waverly, which is incredibly haunted, you're going to have experiences yourself.
Have you been able to record one of those voices before?
I do EVP, yes. Yeah. I do both EVP and ITC.
ITC, what does that mean?
That's instrumental transcommunication.
What is that? Something shows up in the needle's jump or what?
Well, it's the next evolutionary stage from EVP. In electronic voice phenomena, you set a tape recorder out, and then you hear voices on playback. But ITC is two-way real-time. You have devices that facilitate two-way real-time communication. It's almost like a mediumistic interface.
So when you say two-way communication, are you talking about you could actually talk to the entity?
That's the idea. That
anybody ever talked to you?
Oh, yes.
What kind of thing? What kind of conversation do you have, Rosemary?
Well, usually with these interfaces, you're lucky to get a short answer. You might ask for your name. You might ask for someone, whoever is coming through this device, to identify the people present. And it's not unusual to hear your own name called out through these devices. You can ask yes and no questions. You might zero in on a specific entity. Like if you know there's a particular haunting presence,
This place in Kentucky, mm-hmm. Who's supposed to be haunting that place?
Well, actually, there's like no dominant ghost of an individual. There are so many ghosts there from the tuberculosis victims and also the nursing home victims that there are just a lot of anonymous spirits going around. Now, I'm not going to use ITC at Waverly. I believe that ITC should be used for research with the higher realms, where we tune into advanced beings who are attempting to help us build bridges to cut across these dimensions.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley, you're very prolific, and I mean that in a compliment. You write a lot of things. What are you doing now that people can pick up as far as books and whatever? You may be making movies by now. I know you're going back out to Hollywood pretty soon.
I'm doing a number of documentaries. I have one coming out on Sci-Fi this fall called Children of the Grave, featuring the League of Paranormal Gentlemen, of which I'm a member, even though I'm
not a gentleman. I've noticed that.
I guess I'm a female sidekick. But no, it's great. A great group of guys. I'm working with top-notch people like John Zaffis and Troy Taylor and Keith Age. The Booth Brothers are producing that. I'm going to be in a Mysterious Journeys for the Travel Channel on witchcraft in Salem in the fall. And then I'm going out to L.A. to discuss some international film projects.
Hey, great.
I have a new ghost encyclopedia coming out in August.
You've had one before, didn't you?
This is the third edition.
Yeah,
I've just
right.
revised it for the third edition.
And when we talk about ghost encyclopedias, what are we... Everything's listed A through Z, or what?
It's A through Z. It's famous places, cases, phenomena, research, personalities, folklore, cross-cultural, but mostly about North American cases.
And you list each of these incidents in there, and what would I find if I picked that book up? What would that, would it be in great detail, each story? Or
I go into as much detail as I possibly can. Okay. For example, when I write up a famous haunted place like Waverly, there would be a lot of history of the place, then the haunting activity, and what some of the explanations are for the haunting activity. Can we verify some of the activity against history so we can identify perhaps personalities that might be present? With Waverly, there are so many figures and a lot of dark entities that we call shadow people. It's difficult to pinpoint specific cases there.
Well, let's talk about the shadow people for a moment. Tell me a little bit about this. What are we talking about here?
Shadow people are a fascinating area that I started researching in depth about 2 years ago, mainly because of these dark figures that I came across in haunted locations. And then I also became aware of another kind of shadow person, which is the nighttime bedside visitor. A person wakes up in the middle of the night and sees a looming, usually tall, male, hatted, coated figure beside the bed or in a corner of the room, and it's quite a terrifying experience. Well, I found that there really wasn't much written up in the literature on shadow people, so I thought, well, I think I better find out about this. Collect a few dozen articles, stories, write an article.
So basically, who are these shadow people?
Well, I think that there are different kinds of shadow
people,
and there are haunting figures, but what fascinated me was the core shadow person experience, the nighttime visitor, and my current working hypothesis on them is, the latest twist in my research, and I've collected hundreds of cases, is that they are some sort of monitoring entity. They are not human. They take human form. They shapeshift into human forms. They may be connected with the ET monitoring because people, not everybody, but a fairly substantial proportion of shadow people experiencers are ET experiencers as well. They do not take us anywhere. They do not communicate with us, but I believe that they are monitoring us by tuning into our consciousness during sleep and dreams. So they're reading something of our thoughts, maybe the way we process emotions. We might even be getting some programming from them.
When you say programming, you mean they're embedding memories or actions or functions that we do every day, or what?
They might be embedding memories. They might be influencing the way we think about things, the mechanisms by which we think about things, or how we think about things, or even what we think about. Some people propose that shadow people might be part of a government monitoring, like mind control thing. I'm more inclined to think that they're associated with ETs because the abducting ETs monitor us physically. They come and they want to look at our physical data, our genetic material. I think that there's a good case that can be made for shadow people as not sentient beings, but some sort of programmed artificial intelligence or drone that is able to slip into our dimension while we're sleeping to gather data from our sleeping consciousness. When we notice them, when we wake up and notice them, they almost always disappear very quickly. They go through walls, they vanish. Even though they have mass and they can block light and objects, suddenly they have no mass at all. I think they are programmed to disappear when they are observed.
Are the shadow people dangerous or...
A lot of people think that shadow people are dangerous because the automatic gut reaction to them is one of great fear, terror, and panic. People say that they radiate this malevolence, this trickster, sinister energy. They think they're up to no good. But so far, no one has actually physically been harmed by shadow people. The question is, if they are programming us or extracting something from us, that may be where some sort of harm is being done.
They are specialized in intimidation, I guess.
It might be some benign intelligence gathering too, and it may be that it's their form and the energy field that they have when they manifest in our dimension that kind of triggers a fear reaction in us. But they may be just gathering data the way a researcher might gather data for a book. It's hard to say at this point. But there's definitely something going on with this phenomenon.
We're going to talk a little bit about Roswell here in a minute with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. But before we do that, I want to get back to you going to these places and where places are haunted. Have you ever had a terrifying experience, something where you really thought you were in danger?
I've certainly had scary experiences.
I mean, you're a nice-looking lady, and you look like the least likely suspect to be hanging around a haunted place.
Well, I've spent so many years doing this full-time that you can't help but have a lot of experiences. And they've run the gamut from really wonderful mystical experiences to downright terrifying, creepy experiences with entities I'd never like to see again.
Well, okay, the mystical experiences, what are you talking about?
Well, because I cover the gamut. I talk about angels and are a spiritual
So you feel
path.
You've had encounters with angels?
I have had encounters with angels, many with elementals and fairy beings. I've had E.T. encounters, bedroom visits from ETs. I've had bedroom visits from negative entities. I've seen shadow people. I've experienced a wide range of ghost phenomena. And every now and then there's just a very, you run into unpleasant presences that are very threatening. And yes, there are places that I have not wanted to spend much time in because I felt that the presence there was so sinister that I didn't
want
contact with it.
Do you feel you're psychic yourself?
That's how I got into all this, Jerry.
Okay. Yeah.
Psychic experiences when I was a kid and a lot of precognitive dreaming in my family that fascinated me about the unknown. I think everybody is psychic to some degree, and you can't investigate the paranormal without building that up in yourself. But I do use psychic sensitivities when I go out and investigate. I don't call myself a psychic. I don't go out as a psychic. Mm-hmm. But I think any investigator develops that sixth sense, whether they realize it or not.
Okay, the next time I'm around you, I'll remember that and what I'm thinking.
So everybody automatically thinks you know what they're thinking. But you're automatically tuning into their
what's
aura.
What's happening with you here in Roswell?
I came to Roswell because I'm part of the Fate Party. I'm a consulting editor for Fate, and I cover a lot of ufology topics for Fate.
Yes, you do. I've run across you at several UFO
UFOs
conferences.
UFOs have been a big area of interest of mine since childhood. So, and I'm always collecting information for articles and for books. So I'm interviewing people here for our Fate coverage of this event.
Well, you had a very interesting fellow out there a while ago. He was around Jesse Marcel's house, huh?
He was, yes. He was in the Air Force, Jack Trowbridge, and was playing, he's sitting right here in front of us today, and I think you should definitely get him on the air, Jerry.
We're going to have Jack here in just a second, but I just wanted to mention that you'd already talked to him,
yes.
And you're going to write an article about it?
We met yesterday, yes. We met yesterday out at the Hubcorn crash site field, and it was quite a fortuitous meeting. I enjoyed hearing very much Jack's description of that famous night at the Marcel House, all playing bridge, and here he comes home with a truckload of debris, and I'll let him pick up the rest of the story.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk to him about it here in a moment. But Fate Magazine, you're right on top of a lot of things here, and they...
Fate's
if they're around
edge.
Here tomorrow, Fate still has their booth here on Sunday. So,
so yes, my interview with Jack will appear in Fate Magazine and some other interviews that also interviewed Hubcorn yesterday out at.
And now he's the rancher himself, but he's a fairly young guy. He wasn't
yes.
around here. Now.
No. In fact, his family just bought that land in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, Jane. I'm talking to our editor right now. Anybody have a question for Rosemary before I let her go?
Why did
Hold on a minute. I'll get you on the air.
I'm coming there.
Okay, we're rolling again. Jane, pick back up. Talking to my editor. Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm John Trowbridge. I'm the son of Jack Trowbridge.
Okay.
And my question is, with all this information that's coming out that pretty clearly shows all these things have happened, why is the government still so secretive, so suppressive?
I think the old habits are hard to break. What do you think, Rosemary?
I've tended to believe that there's a fear of social chaos or some sort of breakdown of order if people knew too much about alien civilizations. It's a fairly logical explanation. It does puzzle me how, if they are keeping a lid on secrets, how it's been kept so thoroughly for so many years. However, we do have other governments around the world making more disclosures now about what they've got in their files. And ultimately, I think it's all going to come out. And I think that there will be a certain amount of social disorder. You can imagine how certain religious beliefs would be upset with things that we might discover about aliens. and how we came to be on this planet, what their intentions are toward us. Naturally, superior cultures, when they meet inferior cultures, often overtake. And so if a superior culture is coming and having open contact with us, we could stand to be big losers in that.
You're listening to our show direct from Roswell. We're here at the Civic Center. They really had it went all out this time, didn't they, Rosemary?
This is great. This is the biggest I've seen yet, and I hope they keep it up because people are obviously interested in not only what happened here in Roswell, but the whole field of ufology and what's going on about what we know and what we don't know and what we should know.
We talked about Jack. He'll be up next. I'm Jerry Pippin and Rosemary Allen Guiley. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you.
Eight Magazine and now a TV star coming to a cable channel near you. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate.
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the... We have a very interesting person here in Roswell with us. In fact, we have quite a few, but this man I wanted to talk to for a long time. Hello, everybody. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're back here at the Civic Center in Roswell. And the 60th anniversary is going on. Stephen L. Fawcett is with us. And Stephen is involved in a legal action here in a moment I'll get into. But first of all, Stephen, let's talk a little bit about your book there. And welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jerry. I appreciate the opportunity.
So tell me about the book, first of all.
Well, it is a book of fiction, but it is based on the Roswell incident. I wrote it about 5 years ago. And I am a writer by trade. I was a copywriter for an advertising agency in New York.
Ah, good ad, man. We like to have a Madison Avenue guy here.
And I was also a proposal writer for a major defense contractor, so I worked with a lot of DOD personnel, and I had a top-secret clearance at that time.
Now, are we talking about the Archangels of Dreamland? Is it?
Well, I just wanted to let the audience know that my background is as a writer and not as a researcher of ufology.
Is that the name of the book?
Yes, the book is called The Archangels of Dreamland, and
it's available, and we have a link to it.
It's on Amazon.com. Right. It's sold in bookstores around the country.
Okay, the novel is built around the 1947 UFO incident here in Roswell.
And it's basically a very action-adventure-oriented book. It's about to be made into a major motion picture. And we've had great reviews on it.
In fact, you and I have talked before, at least by email, and... I did look at one of those reviews. It was very good.
Yeah, and what's happened recently, I've decided to come here to Roswell to give the individuals here a chance to read the book and to interview me. And what happened was that I had written the book very soon after the 9/11 incident. And my agent in New York had taken it around to several of the top publishers in New York, and they told me it's a very anti-government themed book, and they told me that they would not be able to publish this book in the political environment that we were in right after 9/11. So I had a multimillionaire entrepreneur friend of mine read it, and he said, I'd like to publish it. And I said, fine, that's great. And so he went ahead, published it. It came out very well. It's a nice production publication.
Yeah, it looks good. It's a good read. It's packaged well, and
right.
As well as the guys do in New York. So.
And lately, something very disturbing occurred. He was listed in a complaint by the Securities and Exchange Commission for unauthorized selling of securities online. And the individual that had accused him of this is remaining anonymous. Nobody seems to know who's behind it or why he was listed in this complaint by the SEC. But the effect of the action by the SEC was that his businesses were shut down, and including over 5,000 copies of the Archangels of Dreamland in his facility.
They seized it, in other words.
The government has seized the books.
What did they do, just show up with...
They showed up. Marshals showed up at his offices in Florida, and they padlocked the doors, and he was out. And I'm just concerned about this. I'm concerned that this is a coincidence, or is this deliberate intent? And I believe that that it's a deliberate action, punitive action by the government, because he went ahead and published my book.
So, in other words, you got a reaction from well-known publishers saying, "We like the idea, mm-hmm. but we're afraid to do it at this point because of the climate." I've had that a lot of things like it happened to me broadcast-wise. Well, advertisers not going to buy this advertising if you talk about this, mm-hmm. and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. A lot of I'm not sure whether it's official or just everybody's feeding on each other.
Right.
But you're pretty convinced there's a conspiracy here to shut you out.
I have no doubt of it. I think that what's occurred here is in the first two chapters of the book, I lay out the theme of the book, and I must have stumbled onto something that the government really didn't want released.
What do you think that is?
I really don't know, but I do, and I was here listening to your former guest, one of the things that I think that the government is afraid of talking about Roswell and talking about why the UFO crashed out here is because of the technology. I believe, and this is what the book, my book, involves, is the appropriation of the technology that they found within the craft itself, I believe, changed the course of history. For the past 60 years, every major technological advancement in this world, and I'm talking about the computer, cell phones, emails, everything that we take for granted today, has its genesis in Roswell.
When you're not the first ones to come up with this theory, and that is in your book in the first two chapters, you think?
Yes, yes.
And basically, I think you're right. And that may be one of the problems with disclosure down the line, is these people actually have taken this technology and they don't want to have to tell where they got it because it might be public domain instead of belonging to a corporation.
I just recently wrote the sequel to this book, and I did a lot of research, and I found that the one very interesting thing was that Bell Labs patented the semiconductor in December of 1947. And Bell Labs at the time was a government contractor. They were working hand in glove with the Department of Defense. And I find it interesting that that's a very coincidental date, just 5 months after the Roswell crash, that the semiconductor was patented.
Oh,
by
there's lots of strange coincidences. You're absolutely right, and we've explored those on shows before. How about the movie deal? You're working on the movie people. They don't seem to be afraid of the book.
No. And I did write the screenplay, and it's being done by Valcom Studios and one of the individuals that's involved in it is Stan Lee, who's the creator of Spider-Man.
Yeah, quite well known.
And we're moving forward on that, and since I have the second book written now, it's a planned series of seven books, and and this second book directly dovetails with the first one, so it's a seamless continuation of the story.
Now, when we We talk about this from a writer's standpoint. Had you been to Roswell before you wrote this book?
You know, I've never been to Roswell. This is the first time I've been here.
You
it's great.
You sat down to use your own imagination.
Yeah, I did. And I will tell you very quickly how the idea came to me. It was back in 1998, and I had a dream. And one of the major set pieces of the book is the complete destruction of Las Vegas by a massive earthquake. And I had this dream, and there was something with me there in the dream, and I saw all this carnage going on, and I looked over at that something, and I asked, what day is this? And this entity said, May 6, 2011. And I was so scared of this that when I woke up, I said, well, I'm not going to be anywhere near Las Vegas on May 6, 2011.
Yeah, write that down. We have sponsors from Las Vegas. I don't know how good this is going to go over.
Well, I love Las Vegas. Yeah. So you might want to think about May 6th.
All I have to say, now, fellas, you know, that's a long ways away. Don't worry about it.
And then the next night I had a dream about Roswell, and I had never really thought about Roswell before, but I had this dream, and I woke up, and I'm not a crazy person, but I heard a voice, and it was clear as bell, and it said, don't let them get away with it. And I just, you know, I froze, and I didn't know what to do, and I was in a stage of my life where I really didn't want to write anymore. I had kind of written everything I wanted to write, and I really didn't want to do this. And I almost felt compelled spiritually to be able to move forward and write this book.
What was this voice inside your head, or could you hear it?
No, I heard it. I mean, it was like somebody in the room.
Man's voice, woman's voice.
It was a man's voice.
And so it wasn't a metallic voice or anything. It was just a regular voice.
Yes.
Out of the blue.
Yeah, I looked around the room to see if there was anyone there. And so I got up and I started making notes, and the next day I saw the entire story play like I was sitting in a movie theater watching this entire thing, and it was like I was laying back with a bucket of popcorn and saying, this is like the greatest story I've ever seen.
Well, it'll be interesting to compare that vision or whatever you want to call it with the final product that Stan Lee comes up with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just
it might be identical.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. But they're not afraid of the government on this. At least I don't think so. But the situation with my publisher is very, very disturbing. And yes, it may be coincidence, but I happen to know the government from my military experience.
So the government's attitude is what? We're not ever going to release this book. This is an asset we seize because of other...
And it's completely unfounded. There's no criminal action. There's no anything other than some anonymous person called up and said he tried to sell me some stock or securities in something online, and they came in and shut the whole thing down and seized over 5,000 copies of the book.
Is your publisher going to get his day in court?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll occur, but, you know, I mean, the effect of this is
that... Well, basically, they'll probably drop the case the day before. They've already made the damage. They've done the damage to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, I've been receiving calls from Baker & Taylor, which is a book distributor, a major book distributor, and Ingram, which is another company.
Sure.
And they're wanting to know how to fill orders, back orders from, you know, I don't know really exactly what to do about that right now.
Well, we're promoting the book, but you think Amazon still has some copies?
Oh, Amazon still has some copies. You can get it on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And I think there are some other eBay selling, you know,
okay, this first time in Roswell, have you been here meeting people, talking to people? We're almost out of time. What's your impression? You found another story or evidence to back up your piece of fiction that sounds real?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I like to think that you can tell the truth through fiction. Just as easily as you can tell it through, you know, a nonfiction piece. So, you know, I'm very excited about the opportunity to be here and meet with everyone. I mean, it's a wonderful gathering, and I just wanted to be a part of it.
Okay, thank you very much, Stephen L. Fawcett. And we'll keep our eyes and we'll stay in touch. We've got to find out what happens with this very interesting case.
Major sighting here.
On the 13th of March, weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix, and no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights, all the strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona. I guess a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing new.
Winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Keita, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from shockjerrypippin.com. Order now.